Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spiders. First off, I've had people asking, and I know it's been kind of a theme throughout the summer, but we are finally moving into the house. We're starting the move on Tuesday. It's not going to be a one-day deal. I'm going to have to go over and set up the tarantula room and get everything. We're going to get all the stuff over that we can kind of bring over in the cars and trucks beforehand. And then when we get the internet hooked up and everything, because obviously nobody in the house can do anything without internet. So what we'll do is try to get the majority of the stuff over there. Then we'll do the big move. We'll get the U-Haul and get everything over there, get situated. So we figure probably within 2 weeks we'll be in completely. We'll see how it goes, though. But Tuesday, we're doing the final walkthrough. The people are out. There was worry that they weren't going to leave because we had a weird situation where they asked for more time to stay in the house. They were essentially paying us rent to stay in the house they just sold. It was a bizarre situation, but we really wanted the house. Well, anyway, we're doing the walkthrough on Tuesday. I'm going to leave school early to go down to do the walkthrough, and my back of my car will be filled with a bunch of the new enclosures I purchased because we're going to start moving those into the room, and then I'll probably take a couple trips on Tuesday, and then we'll get things going. So I will be, I'll post some information up as we go for people that are interested, maybe some pictures of what we're doing, but really excited about it because, again, mostly for the podcast, the videos, I'm going to continue. When I record the videos and when I do my videos, my computer is in my living room. I'm looking at my TV right now. I'm looking at my couches. Like, I like being in the midst of everything with the kids and the family. I don't want to be in a situation where I'm isolating myself. That would really, for lack of a better term, suck. So I want to keep that situation going, and we'll probably keep the main editing computer down here, but the podcast computer will be going. There'll be a separate computer. I'll be doing the podcast on my older one, and that will be going up into the tarantula room so I can have some quiet, and we'll be getting guests on. It'll open up the door for a lot of new things with the podcast, because again, this was never only supposed to be me. The goal from the very beginning, I think I even said this in like the first or second episode, was to get other people on to talk about tarantulas, different experts. And so we'll finally get to do that. I'm really excited about it because it really kind of open things up and make it even more informative. So anyway, just a quick update on that. I don't know. I'm sure some people out there are like, we're sick of hearing about your house. And I totally appreciate it. But it does have a lot to do with what we're going to be doing going ahead. So I try to keep people updated. And then once I let the cat out of the bag a few months ago and said, we're buying a new house, everybody's asking, have you moved yet? Have you moved yet? And the answer has been no. So pretty soon it will be yes, we've moved and we're in the new house. So anyway, just a quick update on that. For the first part of this podcast, I wasn't going to do this until this morning when I started thinking about it because I was going to kind of address the situation because I've had several people contact me about it. And I'm like, I really don't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole, but I feel like I have to. And I hate rant episodes. I don't do this. I don't like drama. I mean, I think somebody out there made a comment on one of the reviews for the podcast that I saw. It was a while back, and they said that I try to avoid taking a side on big issues. I try to give everybody both sides of the information, and I do try to stay away from polarizing issues because drama does nothing. If you watch Facebook, it's full of it. YouTube, even with the videos and the commenters and people having drama between different content creators or whatever, I am no part of that. I want no part of it whatsoever. It's somebody just contacted me and I'm mulling this over, but they asked if I would ever think about doing like a podcast where I talk about YouTube channels and maybe not, break down what are good ones and bad ones, but talk about some of the ones I enjoy and some of the ones I watch for entertainment. And even there, you're opening up a whole bag of worms because somebody's going to end up with hurt feelings. I'm going to call somebody entertainment. And they're going to go, but I think I'm educational. And it's like, I don't want anything to do with that. That's one of the reasons I keep kind of a low social profile as far as everything goes. I know the majority of people out there do this stuff. It's, scream to the world, look at my videos, listen to my podcast, read my website. I don't do a lot of promotion because it's not what I'm about. I figure people will find the information eventually. There's nothing I enjoy hearing more than when people will email or contact me and go, man, I just talked to a friend who's getting in the hobby. I said, you got to check out this guy's stuff. That's what I want. Word of mouth. Kind of like a good band. When you get a good underground band and they, get a following because, not because necessarily, obviously they're out there touring and promoting whatever, but it's people sharing, you need to listen to these guys. That's how I like getting things done. And conversely, I don't like going in and talking about other channels, other people. They can do whatever they want. Every once in a while, though, something happens. It's so egregious that basically people, I don't want to say run me to tattle. It's not a tattle thing, but it's more like they've listened to me for a while, whether it be through the videos or the podcast. They know my line of thinking about this kind of stuff. And I think some of them, like one of them said flat out, as soon as I saw this, I'm like, Tom Moran must be dying. And he was when he saw it. So anyway, to make a long story short, I'm not going to use the channel's name or the individual's name as I've done in the past where I might have critiqued something that was said. And again, when I do this, this isn't a personal attack on an individual. I'm not, we're taking that right out of it, because a lot of the people that are on YouTube, they're putting out information. One of the, individuals that we'll be talking about later today, I've actually interacted with. They seem incredibly pleasant. It comes down to, there is so much misinformation in this hobby, so many bad examples set, that sometimes there's ones that are so bad that it just really, it reminds you of why, well, reminds me of why I do this and why I do what I do. And also kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, kind of irritates me that people are out there still doing this kind of stuff and putting it out there for people and pretending to be experts, and or in some cases doing the old, oh, I'm not an expert, you can learn with me, but then they learn wrong. So all of the people that are worshiping this individual are now doing the wrong thing. Enough, so let's just get into it. So I'm sure a lot of you have seen, there was a video posted up by probably the most, we'll say the most popular exotic pet tuber out there, wherein they had a tarantula that was stuck in a molt, and after diddling with it for a while and flipping around, pulling on it, you know, the thing was obviously in rough shape. They decided it was not going to be able to survive the molt. It was caught in there good, and it looks like it started drying up. And there's unfortunately, when that happens, the tarantula, as the new exoskeleton dries up and expands, it tends to get trapped in the old molt. So you have limited time to do things to kind of get them out of there. And it seemed like this individual was trying some things. Of course, it was all on camera and quite frankly seemed all for show. And then they decided that they would have to euthanize it. So it turned into a big, let's jump on the internet, let's go through the misinformation rabbit hole and look up how to euthanize a spider. Now, you would assume that people that have been in the hobby long enough have already encountered this. I guess he's had fantastically good luck without having to ever euthanize anything. Maybe they just all die outright. I don't know. But they went on and basically were trying to figure out the best way to euthanize a spider. So this could have been a good video, because people are like, all right, this is what happens when you get one of these situations. Because my first reaction was, for crying out loud, you've been in the hobby for how long and you haven't looked this up before? But then I'm like, maybe they haven't. Maybe this is brand new and they're showing people. I think I did something in the past where I kind of walk through how I find information when I go online, how I kind of fact check and make sure it's reliable. And in this case, there was none of that. It was just pull up the first thing that Google brings up, which is not always the best thing, unfortunately. I would love it if the first thing that came up was something, you know, the correct information, but it's whoever gets the most views, mostly. It's you know, the traffic. So I'm not going to summarize the whole thing, but they went through and they went to freezing the tarantula. I'm like, all right, there you go. You got your answer. Nope. They decided that freezing could cause pain. They went to using CO2, and we'll talk a little bit about these in a bit, and we're going to be talking more about these in a future episode. But they went to CO2. Nope, I don't have any way to create the CO2. I don't have dry ice. So they then, I believe the next one, it was not necessarily in this particular order. One of them was smashing them. I've heard that one before. And people, basically, obviously, it's exactly how it sounds. You take the spider, you take something very big, and you smash the spider. Instant death. It's most of us can't do this because of the physical trauma to it. You know, the thought of it's making me want to puke, honestly, right now. But that was another one. Then they had one, and we'll get back to this in a moment because this led to another issue. Sacrifice. And apparently in this method, in which you lay the spider down on an altar and light can't... No, I'm just kidding. You take the tarantula. I heard sacrifice, and I'm like, huh? You take the tarantula and you feed it to a healthy tarantula. So you take your live tarantula that you're trying to humanely dispatch and you give it to another tarantula. And we'll get into that in a minute, because there's another whole thing that comes off of this that it was mind-blowing. So that was one of the methods. And he was like, no way, we're not doing that, which is good. So long story short, he ends up on a video, I believe, about how to dispatch him, scrolls down to the comments and finds a comment where somebody says, I know you can kill wasps by putting them in Dawn dish detergent in water. It seems to me you drop them right in, they die immediately. That would work with spiders too. So guess what we choose to use? Not the freezing, which is a method that's been used by many for many years, and we'll get into that in a moment. Not CO2, and I get the CO2 part, because a lot of people, I know if I had to scramble and I had a spider that was suffering, you know, trying to go out find dry ice, or I believe you can mix, I could be mistaken, is that we mix vinegar and baking soda, it also works, but I think the dry ice is the way to go. I did have somebody tell me they hooked it to a car exhaust, which was one of the most bizarre things I ever heard, but apparently it worked. They skipped all of these, thankfully, sacrifice, we'll get back to that. And they decided to do the Dawn thing. I was watching, and again, the only reason I watch this video, because I don't watch a lot of YouTube videos. I have certain people I go to, and I love their stuff, and, you know, just their personalities. I like what they put out there, but in this case, I haven't watched this individual for quite some time, and I had a bunch of people go, you need to see this, you need to see this, you need to see this. It just kept happening. Finally, like, I'll check it out. He basically took a little, like, plastic bin, filled it with warm water, squirted it in a bunch of dish soap, and then threw the spider in it. And I was appalled. Like, I of all those things, that's what came up, a comment on somebody else's thing talking about wasps. Again, it's insects, tarantulas. Now, I'm assuming what happens within this situation, the spider doesn't immediately die. I'm going to go out on a limb and say the spider doesn't immediately just hit Dawn water and go, done. What's going to happen is the Dawn will probably help cut some of the surface tension, keep the water bubbles. I mean, spiders can float. If you put a spider in the water, their hair is very waterproof. Their bodies are very waterproof. They float right on the top. They can create little air bubbles around themselves to keep them afloat. I'm sure that cuts down on the friction, eliminates the ability to be able to create those bubbles. So the spider did sink. So basically, you just drowned an animal, which I don't know how. And again, I'm looking into more information on this, because I just contacted Andy Anderson, who's the vet we're hoping to interview as one of our first guests on the show to hear about some, you know, what's going on in tarantula medicine, because they are making advances. But from what I've gathered from many sources, and I will read one in a moment, freezing, when you put them in the freezer, a lot of spiders are in places, and tarantulas are in places where it gets cold. They go into standby mode. They essentially go to sleep. They don't just freeze like we do. They don't feel temperatures even like humans do. And then, you know, consequently, when humans freeze to death, they tend to shut down as well. They kind of go to sleep before they die. Granted, we are freezing, we're shivering, we're cold. But with tarantulas, they don't feel it that way. The temperature gets lower, lower, lower. They basically, you know, go into standby mode. And from my understanding, then they expire. I think the majority of us have used this method. And again, I will say, and this is why I want to be fully clear. Every once in a while, you hear something like this or something like this comes up. And it may not be like, the point of this podcast is the fact that this is not how you go about doing research on something, when, especially something when you're talking about the life of an animal that's slowly dying. But there's always something to be gleaned from. There's always something to be gained. So it did make me, when he went over that and started passing up, I mean, basically he's going online, going through, looking at the different, you know, he's going to Arachnaboards, he's on somebody's website, he's on a YouTube video, because obviously everybody knows YouTube's the best place to go for information like that. And I will say, just by having watched him go through the search, it did get me to think, all right, maybe I should double check on the freezing thing. Like, it's always been my belief that that's okay, and that it does not cause him any harm, it does not cause him any pain, but it did get me thinking a little bit. But I can't imagine going from that and going, you know what, I'm not going to freeze him because they're going to have a lot of pain, and then drowning him. I don't get it. So it did cause an uproar. I got, honest to God, I think we're at a dozen emails now from people, maybe 10 to 12 emails from people who were asking if I saw it and what my thoughts were on it, if I do a podcast on how to correctly euthanize a tarantula, which I will. This won't be it. I'm sharing my information, but I've got some research to do now because I want to be darn sure that what I say is true. But what bothered me about this is it became an exploitive, you know, if I have an animal dying, I'm not whipping out the camera. And if I am whipping out the camera, it's to go, all right, guys, here's the situation. This spider is caught in its molt. I can no longer do anything for it. It's hardened up. It's going to die. It's going to, you know, have a long lingering death. We are going to euthanize it. Here is the correct way. I wouldn't go, all right, here's my spider that I'm flipping around, toying with, pulling its legs. It's on its front, it's on its back. I pulled its carapace off. And then let's hop online and see if some fool knows how to kill this thing. It shouldn't work like that. It's a terrible message. It's a terrible message all around, because I think what he was trying to show is him doing the research. That's great if you end up with the right research. But going on a site, now I want to just say, one of the sites that he went on, this is when it started to scare me a bit, because he hopped on a website with, I looked at the video, and I am aware of this person, incredibly nice individual, and I don't want this to come across as bashing, because it's not. It's just a critique, an honest critique and an honest issue I have with situations like these. There was a site that's up here, and I'm not going to give the heading of it, but it's Euthanasia for Tarantulas. I'm like, all right, let's look it up. And first thing listed, blunt force. Second thing listed, sacrifice. Now, hear me out on this. This is where I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Another method that tarantula owners will use, although many will argue it's not humane at all, that's good that's in there, is to feed their sick or injured tarantula to another healthier tarantula. The reasoning behind this is that the tarantula is not wasted, and there are arguments that since the spider is going to die anyway, at least it's going to the greater good of the collection. No one really knows how, quote-unquote, humane or quick painless this actually is. Have you ever watched a tarantula feed on a larger predator? I'm sure it's incredibly painless. And many would argue that even when something as small as a superworm is being eaten, the prey is able to struggle and move around for quite some time before the venom takes hold and it dies completely. I personally would not recommend this as humane, but others would disagree, so that's why I'm including it. It is particularly popular for tarantula owners to feed their dying mature males to females in their collection. What? Like, and this is the part that blows my mind, because not only is this individual, the one that made the original video, has a huge number of followers. Huge number of followers. So these people, and I don't know how many people listening to this follow what goes on YouTube and the whole idol, you know, idol worship we have going on, where we root for our YouTubers and they can't do any wrong, which always drove me nuts. But they see their favorite YouTuber do something, and that's suddenly their gods amongst the hobby. That these people know everything, so therefore it must be correct. So they watch this person go over here to this website where the person puts up sacrifice as a way of dispatching. Well, I don't quite agree with it, but I'm going to include it here anyway. What? Why would you include that? There are people now that are going to go do this research. They're going to see sacrifice and go, well, I got my T. Blondie over here. My B. albopilosum's kind of sick. I'll just toss her in and let her get killed. You know, that's obviously humane, because if you've seen tarantulas kill things, it is not usually humane death. They squirm, they wiggle. It's kind of brutal to watch. I've fed out, you know, larger prey before, like the hissing cockroaches, and it takes them a while to die. It makes me feel terribly about it. I'm not sitting there going, well, it's awesome. I'm sitting there going, man, I really wish that venom would act more quickly. This is terrible. They're impaled. If you've seen spiders, you know, get into it. Males or females eat males. It's not a pretty sight. Granted, the females usually dispatch the males rather quickly, but I've seen ones with them eating and the males still twitching. That is a terrible way to go. And I might add, it says it's particularly popular for tarantula owners to feed their dying mature males to females in their collection. Who does that? That's news to me. Usually what we do is we try to breed the females. It's two different things. I'm not going, well, hey, buddy, you're getting old. You're not able to move around a lot. Go in there and get eaten by her. I want to breed them. And again, I've gone into the whole trying to protect males thing before. I am one that believes if you can get a male, you know, save a male and it can breed multiple times, that's doing a service to the hobby. Yes, you may get fewer slings in your sack, but if it's a good breed, she's still going to get babies. The idea is to protect those males and keep them going. I've never heard of this before in my life. So I did, after this, do some reading just to make sure that, you know, to figure out where this came from, because the individual that wrote this, I know for a fact, because they stated in one of their videos, they keep two tarantulas. I believe one of them is a rosehair, or G. porteri, or G. rosea, and the other one's another species, yet they're writing articles about how to care for tarantulas they've never even set eyes on before. That bothers me a bit. I get we can all, you know, I guess with certain hobbies, you can do research and you can write about it. But when you only keep two spiders and they're two of the easiest spiders you can possibly keep, all the information you are currently putting up is not your own. You're just regurgitating stuff from other people. And that always kind of irritated me a bit, because this is, people come on here, they're going to think this person knows all this, has all this information, all this, you know, experience in keeping tarantulas. There's none. I kept a G. porteri for quite a long time. I don't consider that time as experience in the hobby at all. I think I had her for 15, 16 years or so before I got more. That didn't prepare me for much at all. She sat in a box and sat there. So again, I don't say this to be mean. I don't say this to be derisive or derogatory, but it's the truth. If you're sitting there writing an article, an educational article about something you don't have a lot of experience in, your stuff better be spot on. And it's not, because I think anybody that actually kept tarantulas would look at this and laugh. You should not, I don't know anybody that is feeding tarantulas to their, I shouldn't say that. I'm sure some people out there probably get older males and go, you know what, the heck with it. Let's drop him in, see what happens. And if he gets eaten, he gets eaten. That makes a little more sense. But taking a tarantula, now imagine this, taking a tarantula that's sick and dropping it in with another healthy tarantula. A, it's inhumane. So let's just get that out of the way. That's not a quick way to dispatch a tarantula. It's sick, so you're going to let it get fanged? Come on. And B, if it's sick, why would we want to potentially transfer that to another animal? That makes zero sense. A lot of times, what we've talked about in the past, when tarantulas are sick, we can't figure out what's wrong with them. We don't know if it's a bacterial infection. Sometimes we get wild-caught specimens, which we shouldn't, but they get parasites. You talk about nematodes. There's all different things we don't quite understand. So you're going to take the chance of taking that sick tarantula, and feeding it to another tarantula so it could possibly catch that. Even just on that logical level, it makes zero sense. So I don't know why anybody would ever even put this in a guide, because I will tell you, there are yahoos out there that will sit there, they'll look at this and go, "Huh, sacrifice, I'll just drop it in with my other one," and then just throw it in with another tarantula, let it get ate. That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. So again, I apologize, I'm getting kind of worked up over this, but it just... as of last night before I went to bed, I wasn't going to do much with this topic at all, but I feel like it's a good learning opportunity, and quite frankly, it's therapeutic for me, because this is the type of stuff that drives me absolutely nuts. Having done this for years, having worked hard to put out good information, to use experience to back up what I'm doing, to, you know, research is great, experience is awesome, but when I see things like videos like this, and then it points to another issue, I can't help but say something about it. So again, it's not meant to be mean. It's not meant to be, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm not trying to bully anybody. It's just, I think it's something that needs to be called out. So I don't know how many people had seen this article before. It does come up. It's one of the first things that comes up on Google. Also a video that goes with it. And again, some of the information is, I makes sense. I agree with. But I worry when you look up and see something like that and they're sacrificed. It isn't set aside, like, don't do this method. It's in there, like, I wouldn't do it, but hey, some people do it. I just don't understand that. And then with the audience this individual has. Now, this is, right now, is a prime example of how this type of misinformation gets out there. This person with a huge audience showed this website, showed this video on their channel, so that inevitably led more people to go, oh, here's a place I didn't hear of before, that I didn't know this person existed. I didn't know this person has, you know, an educational tarantula website. I should follow them now. And now they're going to drive more people to it. It drives me insane, because people are going to walk away from this thinking this is what the hobby, because people in the hobby often feed their males to their females and often sacrifice them. I have seen with the sacrifice thing, and I'm wondering, this is where the idea came from. I saw somebody posted up, they had a mature male, I think it was a Pamphibidius species or something, or was it Zenesthus or something? It was one of those big, tropical, colorful ones, and it looked like the male just died of natural causes, and they tossed it in with a female, and I kind of cringe. I got where they were going with it, but the fact that they posted a picture of it, it seemed to be like one of those deals where a lot of people were getting the impression that he fed a live male to her, or that he was just feeding spiders to other spiders. It's not a bad message, and I hate for people to see stuff like that, because if they don't know the background of it, they're going to think that's the norm. Oh, I got a spider I don't want anymore. I'll toss it in with something else. So anyway, back to the original video. He drowned it. He drowned it. And of course, all the, you know, followers, I have another word for him, but the people that don't know any better, they see this individual. He's obviously got many views, which makes him right. That's the other thing, how YouTube works. If you have more views, you are therefore right. It's the most bizarre thing. I had an argument with a guy, not an argument, but a discussion with a guy. And one of his lines, I was trying to explain how something he saw in a video was completely incorrect, and I had experience with it. So I was speaking from experience, and his comment was, well, I saw it on this channel, and he does have this many views, so I kind of went with him. Alrighty, there you go. I mean, unfortunately, the way YouTube works in some respects, it's kind of a popularity contest. And I get it, because people go out, and you're like, well, this guy has a million views. He must be better at this than the guy that only has 10,000 views, which couldn't be further from the truth. But that's why this stuff kind of gets on me sometimes, because now, later on down the road, I can guarantee you somebody's going to tell me, oh, I was looking at how to euthanize my spider, and I saw this on this channel, and thought I'd drown mine in Dawn water too. No, that's not how it works. So I now know that down the road, when people start talking about, I've heard the good way to do this is to drown them in Dawn water, that I know exactly where it came from. I can trace it. If people start using the sacrifice method, it cracks me up, then I know where that came from. It's just, you can see how this builds. And it's a sad part about the hobby. And it's a part that, you know, I have people come on my YouTube channel all the time, and they'll say things, which is, it's an incredible compliment. You should have more followers. And I think that's such, it's such a lovely sentiment. I get where they're coming from. I think a lot of them appreciate what I'm trying to do with the channel. But the long and short of it is, I'm never going to have that huge number of followers, because it's not the most entertaining channel for people that aren't already into the hobby. I'm not doing all the, you know, believe me, there's a recipe for getting more views to your channel. Not saying that, you know, I could turn it over and get a million views, but if I really wanted to pick it up, there are things you could do that attract people, but they're not necessarily education. They don't really fit with what I'm trying to do with my channel. And so, unfortunately, that's just not going to be the case. I think I will continue to build, and it's great, because I see it as if I'm getting more subscribers, it's not a popularity contest. It means, despite the fact that I don't have the most entertaining channel out there, people are looking at going, hey, you know what, his information's good. And that's all I want. And honestly, I could give a flying flute about how many subscribers I have. And to be even more honest, I need to be able to respond to people. I need to be able to comment or respond back to comments. So if it got like too big, I wouldn't be able to do that. And I don't think I'd be able to keep it up. I'd freak out. I'd feel rude not answering comments. A part of this is the interactiveness of people seeing a video, asking a question, and I'm able to go back and answer their question. I love that part of it. However, the only time that ever becomes an issue is when people will basically trump you with another site that has more views and use that as the sign of legitimacy that, you know, again, they have more views and do that. Sometimes it's frustrating because like, all right, I get that they have a lot of views, but it's because they do a lot more entertaining stuff that I don't do. That's the only time it becomes an issue. So it stinks because the audience this person has, this could have been an amazing video. And I have no problem. Like, this could have been an amazing opportunity to go look at. I did the research. If it was more planned out and not just by the spur of, you know, a spur of the moment thing, like, hey, let's bounce around here. Look at this site. Look at this site. Hey, I know, I'll pick something from a comment that somebody I've never even heard of before. Like, imagine that. You go through, you do your Google search, and the thing you settle on that you decide this is the method I want to use is a comment on another video. Not the video, not a website that's, you know, written by a respectable author or somebody respected in the field, just a comment. And nothing to the individual that posted that. They were throwing out there as a possibility, but that's what you settle on after all that. It's just crazy. It's totally crazy. So the tarantula was drowned. It resulted in a lot of emails. People were upset. One person that was beside themselves, it was an expletive-filled email, and I was raging with them. I completely got it. I got why they're upset. It blew anybody that's been in the hobby for a while, it blew your mind, because there were two on that list that should have been looked at. The first one is the CO2. You can use dry ice. Again, you can make a little, for lack of a better term, a little like gas chamber with, you know, deli cups and a tube. You make the dry ice. I haven't done it before. There's stuff out there, and maybe we'll talk about that when we get more into, you know, this will be a topic later on. We'll get more into this when I can talk to Andy. But that would have been one. And then the freezing one, everybody's used that for years, because the idea is that when tarantulas freeze, it is painless. Now, I do want to check more into that. Again, we're going to look into it. However, just doing a little bit of research online, just because of this vid, this just happened this morning when I was trying to figure out, you know, how I was going to approach this topic and not come across as a total jerk. I found this article. Didn't take me long. If you must kill that spider, the best way is to freeze it. Now, basically, I'm not going to read the entire article because it's offensive to anybody that loves spiders, but it's about what happens when you find a spider in your house, you're arachnophobic, and instead of just putting it in the basement or putting it outside, you decide you want to end its life. They were saying the best way isn't to smash it, best way isn't to light it on fire. The best way, according to them, is to freeze it. So here is what they have here. No, the best way to kill a spider, says Real Clear Science, is not with fire or water, but with ice. Dr. Jerome Rovner, a professor at Ohio State and a member of the American Arachnological Society, told RCS's Newton blog, catch it in an empty pill vial of appropriate size or baby food jar, snap the cap on, and put it in the refrigerator or freezer overnight. Getting cold is a normal experience of all spiders during the winter, so it doesn't seem cruel to knock them out by lowering their body temperature. The next day, pour enough rubbing alcohol in the container to submerge the frozen spider to ensure that it will not recover from being frozen. Now the dead spider and alcohol can be poured into the toilet and flushed away. So this was on Smithsonian Magazine. Now, again, is this the most reputable source? I don't know. It sounds pretty good. He's a doctor. He's an arachnologist or part of the Arachnological Society. And it should be mentioned they are not talking specifically about tarantulas here, because I'm sure somebody will call me on that. They're talking about spiders, but it's the same general principle. A lot of these tarantulas, if you see them, if you've ever gotten a package in of tarantulas that the heat pack failed and it's been cold, they just shut down. They can appear dead for quite some time. That is supposedly something in the wild. When they're exposed to it, they'll find a spot, they'll get cold, they'll shut down. Now, you figure if they've shut down and gone into standby mode or essentially asleep, and that's the part I want to check on, then if you leave them in there and they freeze solid, they are not going to survive. The majority of tarantulas out there, I don't think tarantulas are built to survive freezing solid. That's not how they work. Even the ones we have, the Aphanopelma species, the ones that do endure harsher winters, will burrow to a point where it's warmer down below the frost line, but they do get exposed to cooler temperatures. However, the tropical ones are not usually exposed to that cold, much cold, but they can still, obviously the thought process behind it is it slows them down. Then they go to sleep. They don't freeze. And one of the things that was talked about is their hemolymph freezing and crystallizing in them. Like, bottom line, if you were able to freeze your blood inside your arm, say, the ice crystals that form the blood would be excruciating. And people were talking about that happening with tarantulas. I don't believe that would happen before the tarantula would naturally expire, but I could be wrong. So we're going to check on that. But I found that article doing, I think I had only searched for maybe less than 5 minutes, and I found that article that would have set my mind at ease that freezing it probably would have been the best way. And again, I get for somebody that maybe has never had to experience a dying tarantula or a situation where they felt like they had to euthanize before, they could be caught off guard. But grabbing up your camera and making a video out of it isn't the best way to go about it if you're not really good at your research. Like, this should have been something where it was planned out if it was done right. And this is just my opinion. So you can tell me to shut up. You can tell me, stop whining, Tom. But I thoroughly believe this. I can look at that. And as somebody who puts out YouTube videos, there is a way that that could have been done where A, it showed, hey, this is not a site. Like, I would have went to that website that had the sacrificial thing, went, right now, this person has only kept two tarantulas. I'm skeptical of the information because whatever information this individual has is not theirs. They've gotten it from other places. And then I would have went to that page where it said the sacrificial thing, said right here, if they put that up, this is not somebody that knows a lot about tarantulas. We're moving on. I would have ended up probably on arachnoboards, where it's one of the spots where this person went to, where if, you know, I know people talk about arachnoboards not always being the most welcoming environment in the world, but there are some great people there and there is a wealth of information. You can go back to the early 2000s and find information about tarantula keeping. You watch how it's evolved over the years, the care for the individual species, and there's a lot of little threads about how to euthanize a spider. And the majority of people will say freezing. You have some people that say CO2. Not many people are smashing them, but you could have gotten good information from that. He could have reached out. There are people out there that will answer their emails or Facebook pages that would have said, hey, this is what I would recommend, and would have made them feel better about the freezing stuff. It's just, the video as it stands now got a bunch of, and of course, usually what happens with these ones where keepers post stuff about their tarantulas dying, it doesn't matter if it's their fault, it doesn't matter if they tortured the poor spider putting it down, everybody gushes about what a great keeper they are, and they did everything they could, and I'm so sad, and it just makes me want to barf sometimes, because it's like, no, that's not the best way, that was not a good situation, that poor spider, just while he was flipping, doing the video, he's just flipping it around, and here's this is that, and these are in here, and this is frozen, and the spider just looks awful. It's just an awful video. Awful video. There, I said it. Awful video. So, again, I hate saying this because it sounds haughty. It sounds like I'm, talking myself up, but I'm assuming if people are listening to my podcast because you're listening to a guy ramble on about spiders for 45, 50 minutes every week, that you love these animals. I'm assuming that if you listen to my podcast, that you appreciate that what I'm saying is truthful and genuine, and that I'm, again, putting out good information. So unfortunately, my target audience is probably not anybody that is currently hearing this podcast right now. And that's sad because I doubt this will get out. And it's one of those things, honestly, if it did get out, and it was one of those ones that, like, if I made a YouTube video, I made a big deal out of it, I'll tell you what would happen. The people that know about tarantulas would jump on and go, thanks, Tom, for making this. People from this individual site would come on and just defend his honor, thumbs down the video and say it was garbage and I didn't know what I was talking about. Believe me, it's happened before. So it's like, unfortunately, even if it got out, I don't know if it would do any good. But I will say it's moments like these that make me, and I don't want people to think I'm over here going, yeah, I'm not going to be able to keep this up forever. It's not the case. I enjoy doing it. I've always enjoyed doing it and I will continue to do it. However, there are moments where I'm reminded that what I do does carry some weight, does have some importance, for lack of a better term. Because sometimes it's like I get caught up, and that's why I hate being lumped in with just, I'm a YouTuber, I blog, I have a podcast. It's not like that for me. For me, it's just, again, it's like teaching. It's an extension of teaching. It's like being able, if you're a teacher, being able to teach your favorite topic or one of your favorite topics every day, any way you want, without having to get reviews or have, to worry about principals or worry about teaching the test. It's like being able to teach in the absolute most optimum environment. And when something like this happens, when you're a teacher and you take what you're teaching seriously, if you're, say you're a teacher in a classroom and you find out the guy next door is teaching kids something completely wrong, you'd want to speak up. You'd want to say something because those kids are going to go out not knowing that they were taught incorrectly. People look up to you when you put yourself in that role as a teacher and an educator. They expect you to have good information. They expect you to know what you're talking about. So that's the only reason every once in a while I bust out with one of these is because that's how I kind of see it. If somebody next door was teaching something totally incorrectly, I would feel obligated to say something because those kids are going to go out with misinformation. Same way people that watch that other video are going to go out thinking, this is how we euthanize our tarantulas in the hobby. We take them out and we draw them a nice warm bath of warm water and Dawn and we drown them. That's not true. So is freezing the best way? We're going to explore that moving ahead. I, again, feel pretty confident in it, but I want to get some more input. So we will look at moving ahead. We will talk about the best way to do it. I will look into building, you know, one of the CO2 chambers to see how that goes for anybody. So this way we'll put an article up and I will do an article on this that will have the correct information on it because I feel like I have to now because if there's misinformation out there, I feel compelled to put the right information out there. And unfortunately, the other one's got to jump on me, but hopefully, you know, it'll get passed around and people will know this is the place to go to for this information. That's one thing about my site, whether you find it boring or wordy, you don't like the layout of it, I would like to think that the majority of people that go to my website come away going, all right, this is the correct information. This is the most up-to-date information. So I'll be doing that. We'll do, obviously, the podcast. We're going to get Andy Anderson on at some point to talk about veterinary medicine. This is one of the topics we will cover, and then I will go ahead and do an article about it. But again, people, I'm going to go out on a limb and say everybody that's listening right now knows this, but be careful where you get your information from. I've covered it before. I've talked to me. We did the book review and it's funny. I did the book review and I think some people really liked it and some people thought I was really mean about it, but it's hard not to get mean when talking about stuff like this because you care about the animals. And when you spend as much time answering comments and emails and trying to get people good information, it's maddening to see somebody put stuff crap out there like that that's completely wrong or bizarre. And it's really upsetting. So much for not spending a lot of time on this topic. I apologize. Again, I hope you realize it's more of a rant from the heart. I'm not like angry or upset or trying to tear other people down. I want to make that very clear because that's not what I'm about. That's why I don't mention names. If I really wanted to be a jerk about it, I would go out and just start going, hey, this person here and this person here. But I understand these people are human beings. The one we're talking about, I actually conversed with years before they blew up. They were asking questions about something and they wanted to redo one of my videos. And I thought they were a nice, very nice individual. But when there's animals involved, it changes everything. I mean, it's like we were talking about last week, just to kind of connect this to last week's podcast, the difference between, you know, the fact that a lot of us don't like to use the word collection is because we see these as living creatures. We see these animals as things that should be loved, should be cared for. Whether they reciprocate that love, we don't care. We adore them. And I think when you see something like this, where a tarantula, you know, oh, it's my favorite tarantula, and they're flopping it around, and they're diddling it, and they're, you know, dumping it in water, you start to recognize who the people are that actually legitimately care for these creatures, and who the people are that are using them as props for their videos to get more views, to build up their audiences, to feed their egos. I don't know. There's an allure to YouTube. I've worked as a teacher now for 18 years, and I think I've shared this anecdote before. One of the things we have to do is transition planning, where we talk about what kids are going to do after they get out of high school. When I first started teaching, the biggest one we got, the most unrealistic expectation for what they were going to do after school we'd get from kids were, I'm going to be a professional basketball player, professional baseball player, professional MMA boxer, whatever it may be. The kids wanted to be professional athletes. That was the big, you know, plan A. I'm going to be a professional athlete. Guess what it is now? They all want to be YouTubers. They all want YouTube channels. They're going to make millions off of YouTube. They're going to be TikTok people, TikTok influencers. I don't know what they're called, man. I really just dated myself there. But they're going to be on social media. They're going to be influencers. They're going to be making lots of money. There's an allure to it. And I get it, I guess, to a point. That's a good thing. I know some really good people that have managed to parlay their YouTube channels into something that really helps the family out, bring some extra money. There's no harm in that. That's awesome. It makes all the sense in the world. However, when there are animals involved, the animals should be first. They're not props. They're not there to just bring in more people. It's been a running theme throughout the podcast from the beginning that's kind of irksome for me. It's irritating. So when you see something like this, and if you go out and seek out the video, I almost implore people not to, but unfortunately you do something like this, you know, the people out of curiosity's sake are going to go and it's going to be another view for them. But hopefully you see what I mean. There's a difference between my God, my spider's dying. I'm really upset with it. I don't know what to do. I've looked it up. I've tried to trim away the thing. You're talking, then, oh, look it. And you're flipping it around and let's go on the internet while it's over here dying and do research now. And it just reeks of exploitation. It reeks of somebody that really didn't give a crap for the animal in the first place and is now just using this as a way because they're going to get the sympathetic viewer. They're going to get the ones that come on and go, oh, you've done so much for your animals. You love your animals so much and you did everything you could, and drowning in Dawn was obviously the best way to go. Because I know if anything ever happens and I get to a situation where I'm in horrible pain or I'm going to die, I would much rather be drowned in a bottle of Dawn or a pool of Dawn in water than some way that might be, I don't know, quick and humane. I, for crying out loud, the drowning thing with animals, it drives me nuts. So, all right, I went off a little bit there. Sorry. Anyway, so that's it for that topic for now. Hopefully you guys see where I come from. Again, I don't like being negative in this. I've said that many, many times. I don't like drawing attention to things that probably would be better left, you know, forgotten, but I don't think any more harm can be done, even if people do check it out. Hopefully you agree. Hopefully people see this. And when something comes up and somebody goes, oh yeah, I saw a video on this person's channel where it said I should drown it in Dawn, you guys will speak up and go, no, that's not how it's done. And my promise to you is what we're going to do is some more research, some actual research. I'm not just going to hop on Google. See, what I could have done is just hopped on Google while I was doing the podcast, pulled up a bunch of random stuff and said, yep, this is my verdict on what the best way is to euthanize a spider or a tarantula. I'm not doing that. I found some information, compelling information that seems to support what I always thought was the best way, which is by freezing. However, we're not done yet. I'm going to talk to veterinarians. I'm going to do some more research and make sure that is indeed the best way to go. If there's a better way and one that's, you know, everybody should be aware of and that we think is better, then we'll talk about that as well. I know there's, you know, there's other ways that scientists dispatch them when they collect them in the field. I can't think of the chemical right now. Probably should have looked that up in the notes on it, but we'll get into that. But moving ahead and moving past this, what we will do, again, there's always good to come from the bad. The good is reading this and going through this and watching the video and looking at the website that he was looking at and going through made me want to re-examine what I've held to be the best way to euthanize a spider and to make sure I'm completely correct in the fact that it's painless and it's a good way to go. I could be wrong, in which case you guys will hear about it. It also made me realize that there hasn't been a lot of research done on it and that maybe talking to some, you know, veterinarians, talking to people that are more knowledgeable than myself, kind of putting together a better list that doesn't include, I don't know, feeding them to another tarantula, that this could be some, we could produce something good out of this. So we will be look forward to a future podcast where we'll discuss this topic. Definitely look forward to a video where we discuss it, because I feel like that there needs to be a better one out there that from somebody that actually keeps, you know, multiple species of tarantulas and has had to do this before. And also look for an article about it, because again, it's a spot where people want information. Three of the people that emailed me specifically asked me to cover this topic and give my opinion on what the correct way to euthanize a spider should be. Your wish is my command. I definitely want to do this one, and we will do it going ahead. And again, for anybody listening, I just want to make it extra clear that bringing this up, I am not personally bashing anybody. I know I've said that already, but I want to make it very clear. This isn't a personal thing. This isn't something. These are probably lovely people. I know one in particular. I've had quite a few interactions with a very lovely individual. It's just a pet peeve of mine when people that don't actually participate in an activity or hobby write about it without any experience. Because experience is not just important with working with the animals. Experience, personal experience, is very important in recognizing good information and good data. Like, I can call BS on things because I've had those personal experiences and go, that doesn't work. That's not true. And this is why. If you don't have any of that experience, it makes it much more difficult for you to go out there, call information from other websites, from message boards, from Facebook groups, and recognize what's good info and what's bad info. Like, if I'm having problems with my health, I'm going to ask a doctor to examine me and do some tests and check me out. And I'm not going to turn to a buddy of mine that, you know, hangs around on medical forums to ask what they think. I want information from somebody that actually has experience in that. I don't want to say expert because I'm not an expert, but there are people out there that have a lot of experience that can back up on it. So anyway, sorry for that long, drawn out thing, but I'm sure the only good thing is Sometimes we do these. I think some of you have probably seen the video already. Some of you have probably been upset by the video already. Some of you were probably shaking your head at the video, and we can all just kind of moan together and be like, ugh, it's ridiculous. And you know, sometimes it's good just to hear somebody else say it. So that's it for that one. I was going to go on. The plan today was to talk a bit about Afana Pelma, because apparently there are a lot of little Afana Pelma slings getting on the showing up on the market right now. I did do an Afana Pelma review a while back, and funny story, 2 weeks ago, I did about 4 pages of notes on my what I was going to do as a Afana Pelma review. I think I mentioned this, and was all ready to start recording and went, wait a minute, I know I did this, and I found that I had already done one. So I really don't want to do that again. However, I know a lot of people are buying slings and freaking out because they're not growing quickly or they're not eating a lot. Here's a heads up with Afana Pelma. We'll touch on it a little bit now. They are a very, of all the things I've kept so far, I think with the exception of my Afana Pelma Annex, which is grew at a fairly good pace, the majority of my Afana Pelma slings I've had are painfully slow growers. That's not said to deter people from getting them. It's not said to, you know, be a negative thing. It's just the truth. They grow very, very, very slowly. I have some that I picked up 3 years ago at probably, oh God, probably a third of an inch or so, maybe a half an inch between there. And right now they're about an inch to an inch and a quarter. We're talking that level of slow growth. And the part of the problem is they will take, you know, time off from eating. They'll bury themselves. They won't eat. They'll fatten up. If they fatten up quickly, you know how we feed our slings sometimes twice a week, or some of us do. If they fatten up quickly, you can expect an incredibly long pre-molt period, which can be upsetting to some folks. So just some things to be aware of when you get them. If you're buying slings, they do grow slowly. They will go through, they'll put on weight pretty quickly, and then they'll stop eating for a while. The pre-molt periods can be very, very long. I have an Afana Pelma Moray that I believe right now is about an inch, maybe not even an inch, maybe 3/4 of an inch in between there. And it last molted about a year ago, and it seems like it's been in pre-molt now for several months. So that's what you have, you know, to be aware of when you get these guys, that it's going to be a slow road until you have one of those big, beautiful tarantulas you've seen. Again, not necessarily a bad thing, but something you should be prepared for. The other thing is the slings will usually like to burrow, and they do appreciate some moist substrate. I've had people come to me saying, well, this is a species from an arid region. You know, it's from Arizona, so I got bone dry substrate. I shared the story where I had my Afana Pelma Annex, the first one I had, where it basically, I gave a dry substrate with just a little, you know, I moistened the corner down a little bit, and it just sat there. It didn't eat. It didn't do anything. And finally, I made a starter burrow, stuck a syringe down the side, filled the bottom, you know, put some water in the bottom so it had nice, wet, moist substrate on the bottom. Came back the next morning. It had dug all the way down, hollowed the whole bottom of it out, and ate immediately. That made a big difference. So when you set them up as slings, you want to give them something. Again, if they're teeny tiny, you know, larger dram bottles, those little Amec boxes can be okay. Make sure you give it some ventilation, but keep those lower levels moist. It'll promote that burrowing behavior you want to see. It gives it a spot to go so it doesn't dry out, especially with the, you know, winter months coming. And I have seen some of them, when it gets a little chillier out, tend to stop eating, and kind of, I think their internal clocks recognize when the air gets a little drier. Despite the fact that your house may not be particularly, you know, hasn't cooled off completely, they seem to recognize it's winter, so some of them will take the winters off. I've had two, most notably Nikki, my Afana Pelma Calcotis female, that would, like, clockwork. She doesn't do it. She hasn't done it this year yet, although it's been quite warm. She used to go in like late October, early November, like the first couple days of November, she'd bury herself and she'd pop up again in April. And literally, we're talking down to the day. It was like April 1st, April 3rd, April 4th, 3 years in a row, she was within a day coming out. So that's something to keep an eye on with them. But that, I suspect Nikki might have been unfortunately wild caught. So that might be why we're seeing some of that, you know, behavior that you would see from a spider that was out in the wild. But I have seen some of my slings bury themselves and take some time off for the winter. So a heads up with that. So for setups, you want to give them some room to burrow, because you want to have some, you know, a little bit, not too much. Don't go overboard. Don't put them in a 32-ounce deli cup. That's too much dirt. I've used those little matchbox containers for some of mine. The dram bottles work great. Give them enough room to burrow in, and enough room that allows you to keep that bottom layer moist at all times. Get a little pipette, a little syringe. Instead of just spraying, I've had people go, oh, I missed the corner. Don't bother with the misting with these. I mean, if you want to mist, if it's on the surface and you want to give it a spot where it can come out and drink every once in a while, I guess that's cool. But as far as keeping the bottom moist, that doesn't help. Misting will not keep the bottom layers moist. You don't want to keep the top layers moist. That's not the trick. The trick is to let the top dry out a bit and allow the bottom, you know, if there's an inch and a half of substrate or 2 inches of substrate, keep the bottom inch or 3/4 inches moist. When that line that demarcates the moist substrate starts getting further and further down, you know it's time to add some moisture. And when you do it down the side of the enclosure so that it goes down through the bottom, through the sides between the substrate and the side of the enclosure and sinks into the bottom and keeps that moist. Don't worry so much about keeping the top moist. It's not about the surface. It's about the bottom. And that allows them to burrow. They'll be nice and happy. They will eat pre-killed. Mine, I used to do the mealworm sections with. They ate those pretty well. I will say that they're kind of, they're a little skittish with prey when they're smaller. So I've had some that I've dropped in what I thought were what would be appropriate size prey for other slings that size. And they've kind of shied away from it. So feel free to use pre-killed for the time being. Again, a trick with the pre-killed, and I've told people this before, if you're afraid your spider isn't eating, put the pre-killed, put the prey item, because sometimes you get a teeny tiny spider and you put in like a couple sections of mealworm, it can be difficult to tell if the spider actually consumed any of the mealworm. So what I do is I like to put it away from the burrow and I take a picture of it. And what you can do is a lot of times you'll find the next day it's been moved. If it's been moved, even if it looks like there's still some material there, there's a good chance the spider went and fed on it because sometimes they won't eat the whole thing. I've had situations where I put in a piece, it's pretty good size, the spider eats part of it, leaves the rest of it. Don't be surprised as well if you give your Fauna sling a larger meal if it fills up in one go. I've had this happen before too, where you drop in a larger prey item, it feeds on that prey item for several hours, drops a prey item, and that's it. It's in primo. It's already had all it needs. So that can happen. I had somebody just email that said they picked one up. It ate great the first time and now it's sealed itself in its burrow. It's not eating. They're worried that it's going to starve. And I asked, what'd you feed it? And they're like, oh, a large mealworm. It ate some of it and then left the rest there. Well, it probably filled up. So temperature wise, these are a, you know, North and South American species. The North American ones are obviously used to experiencing temperatures that get quite chilly, so you do not need extra heat. Room temperature, even room temperature in the 60s will be fine. Just recognize that the lower the temperatures, the slower the metabolism, and if they get too low, your spider won't be in any danger, but it might stop eating. It's going to treat it like it's wintertime, and it will likely bury itself in its den and not come out for a little while. If that's the case, if you have room for a water dish, always keep the water dish full, but they might not always come out for the water dish. So what you want to do is, again, keep those bottom layers of substrate moist. And although I already alluded to enclosure size, something to keep in mind too, they're very slow growing. So if you have a teeny tiny sling, it is not, if you put it in a big enclosure, it's not going to grow into that enclosure very quickly. It's going to be in there for a while. So just not a species I would go ahead and give it an extra larger. I want to keep track of them. I want to know what they're doing, especially when they burrow. So I tend to give them smaller enclosures when they're that young. Once they hit around the inch mark, they seem to start putting on more substantial size with each molt. And in that case, if you want to put them in something a little bit larger, it's much easier to track them. But I would caution against dropping them in something huge, because they're going to be, although the good news is they'll be in that enclosure for probably several years. The bad news is if a lot of times we'll put in spiders in larger enclosure and be like, all right, they're going to fill into it in 2 or 3 molts. Those 2 or 3 molts could take a couple of years. So you want to make sure, maybe not quite that long, but it's going to take a little while. So not one that I would start in a larger enclosure. I usually start mine in something a little smaller. And then once they hit like that 3/4 inch mark, I give them a little extra room. But anyway, that's the basics on the Afana pelma species. I would keep them all that way. Honestly, the trick is don't let things dry out. I don't let things dry out for just about any slings, but there's a lot of information out there, or some information out there about Afana pelma that they need to be kept bone dry. And that's, I haven't found that to be a case. I found the majority of them will do some burrowing, especially when you supply them with substrate that has a moist, you know, moisture on the bottom. They'll dig down to it. That's about it, though. They're very easy spiders to keep. They just don't grow particularly fast, and it's going to be a while before you have. Mine are finally starting. My bicolorata molted a couple months ago, and it's finally got some adult coloration on it. My Calcutta's not so much. Still teeny tiny little thing. I picked up a sling at a pet store a while back, and it's taking forever to grow, but that's fine because it'll be worth the wait once they finally put on size. So if you pick some up, congratulations. I know Fear Not just had a bunch of really cool ones. And what was it? Diamond Species Diamondback? It had some really cool name. I can't think of it right now, but it's like a 2 different colors and just some beautiful spiders. So just note, when you set them up, they're going to grow slowly, but you're going to have gorgeous spiders when they get older. And these are my tips for keeping them. It's worked for me so far. I think I have 7 species of Fauna pelma. They all seem to be doing really well. And hopefully someday I'll be able to show them off as adults. But by that point, I'll probably be in my 60s. So anyway, that will do it for this episode. Again, I apologize for spending almost the entire time whining about a video that I saw, whatever. But again, when you get that many people contacting you, it's kind of, it demands some type of reaction, I guess. And it's the best I can say is just be careful where you're getting your information out there, because unfortunately, there's always going to be people out there putting stuff out that they don't know, you know, maybe not be the best stuff out there. And it's, I think our job as keepers to make sure that when we see stuff like that, there's no point in calling it out. You're just going to get swallowed up by all the sycophantic followers of that individual on their channel. But to let other people know politely, the way to do it is not, I will tell you right now, the way to correct somebody when they get misinformation and they go, well, I got it from tarantula toilet or whatever, is to go, yeah, I completely understand, good guy, but unfortunately, that's not quite the way. Don't bash the person. Oh, that guy's trash. You shouldn't be making videos. He tortures his animals. They're immediately going to close off and not listen to you. The trick is to go, yeah, oh yeah, I totally get a lot of people listen to him, but unfortunately, that information isn't quite current, and try to do it that way so that they actually listen to you and maybe will change the way they view that, or maybe do some more research and realize that, yeah, the information they were given by tarantula toilet wasn't necessarily the best information. But I will tell you, bashing the person and saying how terrible they are, it doesn't get you anywhere. Use tact, be polite, value other people's opinions, value the fact that they were given misinformation. Don't make them feel stupid. You'll have a much better shot at getting them to actually listen to you and hopefully improve their husbandry. So that will do it for this one. Next time I might be doing it from the new house. We'll see how it goes. If the move goes well, I might go over and do one over there and see how it goes. It's been a long time coming. But as always, thanks so much for those of you that tune in and listen to me go on about tarantulas and stuff for an hour. I truly appreciate it. Thanksgiving is coming up for those in the U.S., so I hope everybody has a happy and safe Thanksgiving, because obviously I won't be doing a podcast before Thursday. And that'll do it for this one, guys. Have a great night and a great morning, great evening, and we'll catch you all next time.